The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast. Joshua Adam William Arbuthnot with the ultimate babyface Joel Johnson, the futurist Mo. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming back to the One Fall Podcast. We took that little bit of a break. And before we get going, want to know everyone that this show is not a distraction. We want everyone to still focus on the Black Lives Matter and the social justice that is going on right now around the world. Salute to everybody that's doing their part to continue to spread the word. Anyone that follows this podcast, continue to do that. We're going to be here to talk about wrestling today, but we're not going to stop to try to do whatever we can to continue this movement going. We're not going to be silent on it. We're going to keep on moving forward. But as for tonight, we are going to talk about the pay-per-view that happened, talk about professional wrestling, and I thanks to everyone for the love and support that we have had during this time, and we will continue to show that love and support back. So without that, let's move on to the wrestling side. Mo, Joel, good to have you guys back.
How goes it?
It is, we saw the greatest empty arena match ever?
Well, yeah, I mean, Street Profits and Viking Raiders was just amazing.
And I think that's the quietest most ever been left before.
I got to admit, I did not see it. I read all the results. I was reading them live as they go on.
Did you not see Edge and Orton?
No. And this will be a lot of what I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But first off, I think you guys should run down the pay-per-view. And then I think we need to talk about WWE and, you know, the Paul Heyman, the latest, and just their fan engagement and where they sit right now, because they have completely turned off such a large portion of the audience, and it's continues to get worse, and that's I'm pretty sad for the company right now. But the worst part is I'm not angry. Before, when they were doing stuff that I didn't like, I was angry because I still cared. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not even angry, which means I don't care that much anymore, which that's the scariest part to me. So anyways, you guys run it down I can give opinions on the results. And certainly I know the key moments of each match, but I can't watch it.
I'll say this really quick. Before the pay-per-view started tonight, I told Joel this the other night. It's the first time ever in my life, and you guys know I've been more of a WWE fan than you guys have. It's the first time in my life I was saying, like, if I was a professional wrestler or if I was offered a broadcast job, I would potentially turn down WWE with hopes of going to AEW in New Japan, because it wouldn't be a working environment I particularly wanted to engage with.
It's it's weird to start it off this way, just by saying this, but watching this pay-per-view and watching little bits of the WWE product, not the full thing, but little snippets of things, it's very seldom that I find things that I'm drawn into with WWE. WWE has not been able to tell a good story. They really haven't. There have been little moments that have been good. I thought Bobby and Drew was good, and I thought the Edge and Orton match was actually really good. But they're so rare and in between for things that I care about and want to invest in that I'm a contributor to their number going down. Because
I am too. You and I were both weekly viewers. I haven't really tuned in for a weekly view in a Raw. I think the last time I went to tune in was because of Becky, but that shows kind of a sense of a character that was built decently that I had invested time in, and I was interested in what would happen. But there's not a lot of that. But yeah, we'll get to the bigger discussion of that. I think none of us watched this podcast.
It will be the bigger discussion. But yeah, I mean, first,
yeah,
go through the pay-per-view, and especially, I mean, this greatest match ever. I do have lots of questions about it. That is for sure.
Yeah, let's get to that, because I don't want this. None of us want this show to go 2 hours, because I would like to go watch this 30 for 30 on Maguire and Sosa tonight at some point.
That looks interesting. Did you ever listen? There's a podcast. I was actually sent it to you about Bulko. I don't know if you ever saw it. It was a true crime podcast.
No.
Actually, Jim Cornette had recommended it on his podcast, and that's why I checked it out, believe it or not. And it was incredibly well done. I'll find it for you.
Send that to me.
You absolutely have to listen to it. It's a must listen to. And I wish I could remember the name. I'll see if I can find it shortly here.
We get some Griffey stuff in there too, which I'm excited for. Okay, so we start off with the pre-show. Apollo Crews versus Andrade. I didn't see this match. Joel, did you?
No, I missed it. I was driving home.
We saw KO gave a stunner. Apollo wins. Cool. I'm happy for Apollo and being a champ. The tag team women's belt, Bayley and Sasha, they beat Bliss and Cross in the Iconics. Bliss got pinned by Banks. Sasha gets the win here. It was a fine little women's tag match, nothing too great. And I think you kind of hit this on the nose, Joel, when we were texting during this match, saying the best idea right now is to have Sasha get the pins going forward here.
Yeah, because I think the goal should be to. This is because I feel like Sasha is in desperate need of more of a rehab to really reestablish her. And I think having her be the dominant one in the tag team match, let Bayley still dominate as a singles wrestler, but have Sasha be the one that dominates during the tag team kind of helps build them both up for that collision. But you really have to build Sasha up, because I feel like you haven't done anything with Sasha Banks since she's come back.
Becky feud. The Becky feud with the Hell in a Cell match was one
that's
of
the, that was the good, problem very good that match. Is
probably the last good main roster match since till this Orton and Edge match.
But how many years? When was that match?
That was in October.
Oh God, time just.
Was that just in only in October? Because yeah, all I remember is she came back. And I was saying after she was gone that she needed to come back and something needed to be different. And something was. It was her hair color. And that wasn't different enough.
Yeah.
It was just lame. So.
Yeah. That was in October, that match. It's been a long 2020, I know. But that match was in October.
My thing with that is October to now, you're just kind of starting to heat her up again.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's on your comp. That's so on.
We're
you.
On what year 56 of Bayley and Sasha tease.
That's another thing. Like either
when
some
was the
point
locker room thing. When was the thing where they threw each other into the lockers and had the therapy? Was that 2017 or was that 18 or was that 16?
I think it was 18. Okay. I think that was 18, but. Keep in mind, now we're, like you say, we're in the year 3000 of their build.
Yeah.
And now we're in year 3000 of their build. How many different people have been in charge of creative?
Yeah.
And now somebody new again is in charge of the storyline, really, you know. How many people have been the lead creative on this storyline? And how does that make it a mess from the past and going forward, you know?
Too many people. I would say the Bayley Haley heel turn, I've enjoyed it. I think she's found her, at least in the sense it shouldn't have gotten to that way, because the face character was something that you can make money from. I think much like Asuka did with her character, Bayley was able to find something with his heel character, and she's definitely made it work. I have enjoyed Bayley's run as a heel so far. I think she's done a tremendous job getting herself over with it. And I don't really think, unfortunately for her, the match hasn't been there. I mean, she's the longest running champion in the company right now, which is not talked about nearly enough. She's almost had the title for almost a year. I think she's a few months away from that. So it's almost 200 days now for Bayley being women's champ, but they don't talk about that nearly enough.
I do agree. She's done a better job. Never should have happened, but she has done a better job, you know, than I ever anticipated.
Joel, anything else to add?
I mean, Alexa Bliss had to set her Twitter account to private, and there were people trying to hack into her Twitter account. She's currently being harassed online by creepy men, so...
Yep.
Who is this? I'm sorry?
Bliss.
That's what I thought you said.
And yeah, she's been having that a lot lately. A lot of people trolling her. I think she's in kind of a mental health state with a lot of it as well, unfortunately.
So I wonder if her at them losing getting the titles is just getting her out of the limelight for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just hopefully taking that pressure off. I mean, the Iconics can say that they didn't get pinned, so there can be a story there.
And Peyton Royce went through this, by the way, too. She would get DMs calling her a slut and a whore for the picture she posted of him. And Mia Kanellis had the same thing. When she was posting pictures pregnancy for herself, like trying to look sexy or whatever. We don't talk about it with these women a lot, but you can see how, you know, the world of social media opens up to some of these women and how hard it can be. I think some of them just should just close their DMs, but, you know, Peyton was saying, and Bliss said the same thing. He's like, there is genuinely good fans that I do want to engage with, but it's very hard when you have these assholes that ruin our days.
Ask the Bucks if they regret getting rid of their Twitter.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm. You go back to earlier, what was it, early last month, or middle of last month with Hana Kimura in Japan, and you go, sometimes social media needs to be pulled away.
Mm-hmm.
Just you need to remove it. The match was fine, and the match was all right, but I hope that you can just, especially with everything going on, you can just take Bliss, give her a break, and let her out of the limelight for a bit. Let Sasha and Bayley ride with things for a bit. But you gotta be doing it. You have to, as a company, be able to take care of the mental health of all your performers.
It makes me wonder, you know, I mean, you say, yeah, there's some good fans out there. Isn't there other ways besides social media to engage with fans? Maybe it's not as instant, but I mean, for many years, there was no social media and the fans still managed to find a way to interact with the wrestlers through a mail or certain meet and greets and these different types of things. Just maybe that's just the solution to it all.
I think so.
Next up, Sheamus and Jeff Hardy. You know, this match wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was a fine match. The psychology of the winner of all this makes no sense. The fact that Jeff's been like harassed by Sheamus during this entire time, but I guess he threw the piss on him, so Sheamus gets the win. Which is a line I never thought I'd said, that he threw the piss on him, but this is where we are.
Didn't this match only go like 6 minutes and 48 seconds?
16:50. Second longest match of the show.
16:50. Okay, I got it wrong. I thought it was 6:50.
I have nothing to add. I know this is Joel's piss break, so I don't think there's a lot to add on this.
I walked away, and I came back, and I was like, this match is still going on. Huh. That's a long match. I'm just not a fan of the build, not a fan of the story, and having the guy that, having the babyface that was framed for DUI, who has a real-life history of a DUI, and they used all his mugshots in the promo video. Fun times.
And the fact, too, that, you know, the night that they did that angle, I remember it was a situation of like, man, all this crazy stuff is going on in America right now. I'm going to put wrestling on just for a second because I just need to reset my brain because I'm covering news and I just want to reset my brain. And the first thing you see is a cop car and a car accident and then Jeff Hardy doing this. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, WWE? Especially now of all this. And this is like in the middle of like the police. And I mean, we're still in the middle of all this. But this is like the apex, like 3 days after George Floyd. And they have a fucking police cruiser are the first thing you fucking see on their programming.
Yeah, but the problem is, I mean, the WWE, they're in such a bubble. They're not aware. They're so not aware of what else is going on in the world or how they or anything else is affected or how they are affecting other things. And this is part of the reason why they're struggling, because when wrestling has been at its best, it's often reflected society and the people and the culture and these different things. And right now, they can't do that. So it's
sure can't.
No, they, and we really mean it when we say they can't do that. It's not that they don't want; they absolutely cannot do that. They just they don't have the skills to do it.
Nope.
So yeah, this is fine. I mean, I guess they're kind of pushing Sheamus. Maybe he's going to face Strowman. We'll talk about that in a bit. But there's so many SmackDown.
Well, him and Cesaro, right?
Yeah. SmackDown is probably the best WWE show going right now, which we'll get into. I don't know how much that's saying, but I would say right now the best show they have is SmackDown. There's just so many more talented guys you could have had on this show. Why could you not just done AJ and Bryan instead? I know they want to pop the rating for Fox. That's probably the answer, but you could should have done AJ and Bryan on here. You have Ziggler, you have Gable, you have Cesaro, you have Nakamura. I don't really know why this had to get picked to be on the pay-per-view when there's much better capable performers from SmackDown that could have been in this match. Spot. Anything, Joel?
No.
Asuka and Nia. Nia didn't hurt Asuka, so that was a win. And Nia didn't win, so that's a win. I don't really have anything else to say.
So I think the preference that there is no issue with Nia in regards to her appearance.
Nope.
The issue is she is one of the most unsafe people constantly in professional wrestling that should have been sent back to the Performance Center to learn the basics, because if she'd learn the basics and get those down pat, and she could be half decent for your company. You can see what someone like Nyla Rose has done. I think Nyla Rose has done a tremendous job in AEW.
It's also worth noting, she's been, not this week, but up until this week, since she'd come back, she's been one of the bigger draws, ratings-wise. Her quarter-hour numbers and everything have been extremely strong. So, I mean, I think that says something, but it doesn't matter when she's just going to hurt you.
Yeah. And, I mean, you look at the video with Kairi Sane, and you just see her smack onto the steps. And you look at that and you go that shouldn't have happened. And I don't think Nia fully knows her own strength in a lot of ways. And that's a problem. And we've seen it time and time again.
Well, now the move is banned.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because almost one of the first moves that we saw done then on AEW safely was that move.
Yeah.
This last week.
She's not meant for the world title scene because she is not wrestling skill wise ready to take care. Because you can see when guys can take care of their opponents and protect and keep them safe. That was something that Brett took great pride in.
Hell, sometimes you even better yet, you can't see.
Yeah.
And they do it brilliantly.
And you always hear stories about Glenn Jacobs, how safe of a worker he was and how much of a treat it was to work with him. To me, this doesn't even fall on Nia, because when your boss tells you to go do something, you can't go to the boss and be like, hey, I can't get this push because I'm not safe, because then you're basically out of a job. This falls on WWE's head of pushing someone that's not physically capable of protecting someone.
That's what it's been multiple instances. I mean, that's the key. It's multiple instances.
That is where I take umbrage, and it seems like this feud is going to continue based on the finish to the match. I didn't really like the finish either. And I really like, again, I go back to Nyla Rose and you look at how she works and how hard she's worked to get to this point where she is as a wrestler. I think she's done a tremendous job to get to this point as a wrestler, Nyla Rose. And just please do the same thing with Nia Jax. Get her up.
Nia Jax doesn't have, physically, she can't do things that Nia Rose can do. I know they're both monsters, but she doesn't have the agility and such and all the different stuff. But she isn't as good a promo either. You know, I mean, Nyla Rose is just better and still developing, you know, even greener technically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not like this isn't known again. And people in the WWE are mad and angry and saying, get her out of there. It's, you know, there's a lot of people that are don't want to work with her, are pissed at her for consistently hurting people.
Did she not hurt Bliss?
She hurt Bliss. Becky, of course, is a famous one. She hurt Asuka twice now. There's another one, too. I can't recall who.
Well, she split Kairi open, and then she got hurt on the recorder.
Sorry. Yeah, I said Asuka. I meant Kairi. There was somebody else, too. I think she hurt Bayley.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's my thoughts on this match is just every time she touch Asuka, I'm like, please don't hurt Asuka. Please.
Well, I have a thought. Did you guys see the promo
mark that
she
down.
Cut?
That's first.
Did you guys see the promo that Nia cut?
No.
Racist one?
What?
Yeah, she did something. I mean, I should know, too. It shouldn't matter, but my nephew is Asian. And she did, and so I would like him to grow up in a world where he doesn't have to worry about that, especially in this era now that we're in. You would think that we would be smarter with this shit. But she did.
Want to talk about Bruce Lee like water?
Yeah. I'm not going to go through it, but she kind of did like the cliche Japanese kind of schoolgirl thing about Carrie and Asuka. It wasn't good. Wasn't a fan of it. Doesn't need to happen right now. You know, with that kind of stuff. So again, I don't know if that was her call. It probably wasn't. But still, you know, with any of this, you can say like, oh, well, it was a writer. You're still the one that goes out there and performs it. You can say no. Much like we know with Ambrose, with Vince pushing some of the stuff on him, and he said finally said no. You can say no. Maybe you get the repercussions of it, but you can still say no. But she kind of seems like someone that even if she did say no, it wouldn't matter because she continually injures people. She's continually sloppy in the ring, hurting people. And now even her words are hurting other people as well.
Well, and again, it's WWE approved feud, right? So, I mean, how much does the WWE, you know, how much direction is she getting before she does that on Twitter from the company? I mean, we can't assume it's none. We can't assume it is some, but we also can't assume it isn't because we don't know.
She's really good at TikTok videos. Maybe stick to those. Stick to the TikTok videos. You and Lana. It's the one thing you guys do that's actually you're not too bad at your TikTok videos. I will say too, like it just feel like someone like I feel like there is I think feel like Bliss has handled her social media stuff actually rather well, to be completely honest, at least in throwing back. But between Paige, Nia, and Lana, whenever anyone like throws any hate to them, they completely lose their shit.
Yes.
specifically
I don't know what you want me to say on that.
No, I'm just saying. I admire Bliss when we're talking about that, how Bliss has handled people coming at her. But between those three, specifically Paige at times. And Nia, they make a point to be like, oh, I hate Twitter, and everyone is so mean on here, and it's the worst. It's like, well, then fucking just delete your account then.
Do what the Bucks did.
Yes, that's what the Bucks did. Just fucking delete it.
Yeah, you know, it's true. Just do that. It's easy
Paige
for us
to say. Paige
doubled
down and joined Twitch. So it's like, okay, well, Paige, if you're joining Twitch, then I don't know what to tell you then.
Yeah, her Twitch is terrible. I watched them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good. I watched it too. She's not very good gamer either.
She's not a good gamer. The only time it's interesting is when she watches the old wrestling matches. Yeah. The problem is she keeps watching the same ones over and over and over. So it's like she's not saying anything new. It's not very.
She's in a moment where kind of Brian was or any of the ex wrestlers of you can tell she really really misses being a wrestler. Oh, and she hasn't gotten to the point that someone
she
like
did mention that on the Twitch many times that she, you know, her dream to come back and is in the Women's Royal Rumble to be entry number 30, the surprise entry like Edge and you know, yeah.
Punk's done the best job, I think, of moving on out of anybody that I've seen so far. Punk did a very good job of that. And he'll be with Bret Hart on Tuesday. That's probably one of the better things that came out this week.
You know, the difference is with Punk is he really moved on, though. Like, Daniel Bryan, it wasn't his choice. And
yeah.
Paige, it wasn't Punk's choice.
Yeah,
that's true. With him, he was done because, you know, for the same reason. And he didn't, at the time, he didn't really have an alternative where to go other than UFC, and he wanted to try that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if AEW had existed then, I wonder if he would have been done with wrestling or if he would have still gone to UFC or because, I mean, make no doubt about it. You can tell a lot of people are done. The Viking Raiders are definitely done with WWE. They're now the new revival, waiting, and they're going to get whatever offers they're going to turn down, just waiting to get out. And, you know, it's – and so Punk, you know, who knows? I'm not saying he would have, but – it's possible he would have gone to AEW, but at the time, the really ROH really wasn't an option to go back to, you know, or TNA, obviously. Impact Wrestling was not really an option. So, yeah, it's a different dynamic out there for these people.
Strowman versus Miz and Morrison. I thought the Bray was going to come down. He didn't. Strowman wins. This match was pointless. My guess is it's Strowman and Sheamus next.
So here's the thing, and I said this to you via text while the match is going on. Had you had it a one-on-one match with Morrison and Strowman, and you had Miz as the second for Morrison, and you had Morrison beat guys and not lose to Braun before this match happened, and built it up, and built Morrison up a little bit, built Strowman up, then it's a little bit more like, okay, you've built kind of both
Morrison
guys
and
up.
Strowman in the ring together were good, I will say that. They actually had some decent chemistry.
So what Joel is talking about here is booking 101, which is what they used to do and they should do, and it's not difficult. Yep. Anybody can lay it out, and it's been done successfully for 1,000 years, and you see it done successfully in other companies, but WWE.
Yeah, this should have been an easy build. You should have built him up, and then you have him
lose.
They
cared more about the comedy. They cared more about the Miz and Morrison comedy of this than building up a world championship match.
And that's the problem, where you need to find the balance. You could have some shenanigans, but when the bell rings, the shenanigans are gone, and it's just like the music video, that should have been something you'd done probably... done online at some point, because in a lot of ways Miz and Morrison are a lot of those frat boy type guys, so that fits kind of within that character of being a frat boy douchey type person. Do that music video and be like, look at the money we have, look at all the weights and everything, and this country boy. It's really easy booking to build this match and make you somewhat interested, because if Morrison gets a few key wins under his belt, and then Strowman's Strowman and he's building up, then you get more interest and intrigue. You don't know what Miz is going to do. You can still do a spot within the match where Miz gets involved and then gets batted away by Strowman. Because like you have the intro for Strowman where he's a freight train that's running through everything. He should be running through everything. He should be dominant. He should be a killer. But the build and Strowman from Bill Goldberg to now has just been very flat, very lackluster, and you're not booking him properly. And I think Strowman really suffered from the potatoes from Brock. Having him dominate Morrison after Morrison's dominated a few people on SmackDown helps elevate Morrison to some degree, because it brings him to that main event status for a time. And having Strowman beat him helps put another couple bricks in the tower that you're trying to build for Strowman. Yet you're not doing it, and you're just focusing on making Vince laugh. That's my rant.
Okay, my question for you, both. What is, in recent memory, the greatest title reign in wrestling?
In wrestling or WWE?
In wrestling, in recent memory.
Okada.
And did he ever once beat a scrub?
Not
when he
I
had the
remember.
Belt?
Not that I can remember.
No, he never did.
No.
Every single person he beat was built up and was treated like a threat.
Matt McFarlane.
it reminded me, I mean, even like when that was going on, like with the Shibata match, and then you build up to the Kenny match, and he had the, as he was winning and winning and winning, it reminded me the closest in my lifetime of what Flair went through in the late 80s to 90s. Going through Steamboats and Stings, and it's like, holy shit, this guy is so good, and he's beating everybody. And but every match, like, you feel like, oh, Steamboat's going to do it. Oh, Sting's going to do it. That's probably the closest, I think, why that Okada run matters so much. So,
exactly. And Sting was, or Flair was not beating Scrubs either. Hogan wasn't beating Scrubs.
Nope.
You know, Strowman is. Strowman is beating, you know, it's
probably one of the worst title runs I ever remember, to be honest, to the point that's why I was like, but, well, I don't even care who beats him. Because this,
I mean, this, the guy, though, the thing is, the guy was, I mean, he was a heel. He was a monster heel. He was taking on Roman. He got over. They turned him babyface. He became a comedy character. He was a tag team title with the Kid and all that stuff. Well, you know, the last straw basically for FTR there. And I said this way back then, and I think I said this in the very last ever episode of We Talk Wrestling. The problem with a guy, like, it's such a problem when you're a big guy and the biggest guy essentially in the company, you know, and you're a babyface, it's so hard to find your opponents because a babyface needs to be the underdog. The babyface needs to sell. A babyface, all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's been a few times where a babyface didn't, like Bill Goldberg, but that was a special situation. I mean, the fact of, that's the problem with Strowman. I mean, especially a company that has so much trouble booking somebody strong to anyways and building stars. There's just nobody there for him, you know.
Nope.
Now I guess tonight, my guess is Tozawa, and when he introduced the tall guy, that's Jindrak, and is my guess, and he's tall, so him and Strowman, is that
you said is Mark Jindrak?
Or did I say Jindrak? Jindrak.
It's not Dijak. There was an African American fellow.
Oh, was it? I didn't see again. Okay, all I heard was a tall guy in a mask.
Yeah.
And I know Dijakovic is coming up. Sorry.
He is. Yeah, it wasn't him. I don't know who it was.
I bet you at the end of the day, it's still him.
Could be.
So, just looking at Okada's 12 title defenses, he's got Omega twice, Wrestle Kingdom 11, Dominion, Shibata, Tanahashi, Sanada, Zack Sabre Jr., Naito, Suzuki, Cody, Bad Luck Fale, Evil, and then Namochi Marufuji?
Yeah, Marufuji. He was a legend, Noah, from Noah.
Yeah.
Over there, that's a huge, huge name.
And that you recognize that name right away for Noah and just different things that you've seen. But you look at all 12 of those. And you go, and I was even thinking about guys like Drew, and I was thinking about guys like Strowman, and you just look at how vastly different. Like, to me, the top prize in professional wrestling is the IWGP Heavyweight Title.
Mm-hmm.
That is that to get to that point, to get that title means you have become incredibly successful and finally climbed a mountain. And you look at just how it's treated. And you look at those 12 title defenses that he had.
And when you look at the people that have held it over the last several years, it's like AJ, Kenny, Okada, Tanahashi, Naito. I think that's it. I think in the last 10 years, I think
Jay
that's
White.
It. Jay White. Okay, Jay White, yep. And he's the outlier. I think that's it, though.
Yeah, because if you go through it, just going through it, from 2010, they've got Togi Maccabee. Nakamura started 2010 off.
Nakamura had it, that's right.
Yeah, you had Tana. Yeah, you're right, Naito. It's all these guys outside of Jay White, and they're really building Jay White up.
Exactly. So
out of all those guys, they've given it to. They just don't hand it out like a Skittle.
Jay White was the one time that Gato jumped the gun a little too early. It was a little bit too early. We underestimated this kid. But then, unlike WWE, they made the right call. Unlike in the past with the Summer of Punk, they're like, oh, we got to put it on Del Rio. Okay, they put it on Del Rio too late. Okay, well, now we got to get the Punk. And then they put it on Punk too late. Punk had an okay run with the year and a half title run. There's some good stuff in there. But it's always been too late rather than too early. Yeah, like, yeah. The Del Rio thing, they should have hit on Del Rio way earlier. And they completely messed up Del Rio. And then by proxy, messing up Punk.
Well, they didn't have a plan for Del Rio. It was a sudden decision. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's evidence for the
I'm
fact
saying,
that
when he was hot, they did not hit on Del Rio when he was hot.
Oh, no, when he was hot. No.
Well, they screwed up. They waited way too long.
You know.
And he was one of those guys that kind of.
That's the thing, right? I don't know about you guys. I mean, that's big part of the problem here is I look every time they do anything, I say, oh, they're going to screw that up. And every time they've screwed it up.
Mr. Kennedy. And maybe they're right because he turned out to be a douchebag, but that guy was red hot and they never really pushed it. They just waited. Shelton, when he had the stuff with Hunter.
Shelton is still awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
And he had a really awesome Instagram talk with Candace Michelle recently, which I no one can really get, but I really enjoyed it. Shelton still great, but that's the problem is you always have these, and Strowman's just one of the latest ones here. Becky's the only more recent one. And they're like, oh, I guess we have to, or Brian in a way, but then they tell their old diverted history of like, oh, we always knew we were going to do this. Becky thing wouldn't have happened if the stuff at SummerSlam didn't happen, and the fans got too annoying for them. And just unlike AEW, and I talked to Jewel about this, where something happens and the fans outcry for it, like the Liberians, this sucks. Great, you're right, the Liberian sucks, we're done. The fans literally have to scream and scream and scream at you to change your booking. And we've seen that with Brian. We've seen that with Becky. But sometimes it doesn't even matter how much they scream. Zack Ryder, they'll do a little bit and they're like, okay, we gave you this idiot his freaking title and I'll shut up.
Did you hear what happened to Ryder in WWE? Did you hear his podcast with Jericho?
I did not hear his podcast with Jericho. I will.
Josh, you wanna quickly tell him the
abbreviation? Well, first of all, the Mandy and the Otis thing where they did the pool thing, they asked Zach if they could use his pool.
After they fired him.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The other thing is, so Zach was saying that whole time where he was doing the Internet Champion and everything like that, and Vince, you know, that whole time, it's like, you got to get the brass ring, goddamn, you got to get the brass ring.
Oh, yes, okay, I did hear this.
And then he won the title and everything like that, and then Vince and them stopped talking about the brass ring, and then one day he changed his hair up a little bit, he spiked it up a little bit differently, and Hunter's like, why are you wearing your hair like that? You shouldn't be wearing your hair like that. And yeah, they didn't even book him on the house. It was a house show in Long Island, and they were going to have him on. And their excuse was, we don't like how your hair spiked. You're not on the house show in Long Island.
Yeah, I did hear about this.
Because he grabbed the brass ring.
Well, he tried.
Yeah.
He tried.
He wasn't supposed to, though. He wasn't supposed to do it.
No, he wasn't. No. Yeah, that I mean, there's so many cases. I mean, if we wanted to make that the focus of this podcast.
Yeah.
And
that's why I don't want to go all night. So let's move on to this next thing here, because I do want to get to the bigger topic, and I don't want this to go 2 hours. Drew and Bobby, I actually thought this was actually a pretty good match, actually. It was a fun match. I think because a part of this is kind of what we're talking about, you came in believing Bobby Lashley was a capable challenger to the champion. Unlike with the Miz and Morrison, you didn't believe that. I actually believed, for the first time in a while, like, oh, Bobby Lashley could win the world title. I think they've done a decent job of building up with MVP right now. They've reestablished Bobby Lashley in a great position. Drew's been a pretty good champion so far, but you believe that maybe they want to go in this momentum with Bobby. He started to get some steam. And because of that, it was an enjoyable match. Figure that, Mo. Decent booking. Yeah. Rise up the guy that's hot. Have him against a nice champion. Get a fun match.
I know. I mean, hey. It's booking 101. It's what Gato does every time. It's what they did with Cody and in his match. Will he beat Jericho? Won't he? They did it with Jericho and Moxley. You didn't know, but that's why you care. The whole point,
you want to see it because you don't know. It's not difficult.
And so the end of this match came. They teased it before with MVP and the Lana stuff still going on. Lana comes down. She takes the bump kick from Drew, and he wins. Now you still have the diversion there with Lana and Bobby. You can come back to this match because Bobby didn't really lose. I thought, all in all, the build for it was actually one of the better builds that WWE has done. Drew still wins. He still stays as a pretty decent champion. Potentially, he could be facing Randy, which could be a good match. All in all, I'm not mad about anything with this match. I thought it was perfectly fine.
I mean, a lot of people are questioning, you know, how will he handle not having Heyman there? Because Heyman was one of his advocates. But, he certainly looked like one of Vince's guys tonight from, you know.
Mm-hmm. Joel, anything to add?
The story you can tell moving forward, if you're smart and you know how to tell a story.
So they have no chance.
No, they have no chance. But if they were smart, the storyline would be the next time Lashley faces Drew. There's no MVP. There's no Lana. It's just one-on-one. And then Bobby finally wins the title. All by himself. No distractions. He didn't need anyone else around him. He didn't need a second. He was Drew McIntyre on his own accord. And then he's a legitimate champion.
Once again.
By the Extreme Rules next.
Once again, I mean, Lashley was Heyman was deeply behind him and Drew, both of them. And, yeah, I mean, they keeps on talking about the rumor of the match that's supposed to happen with him and Brock and what direction they're going to go and would that be for a title or not. And everything's up in the air now. Like, this, you know, Heyman being gone, it's so difficult. I mean, if they promised it to him, apparently. I mean, it's in his contract that he's supposed to get that match.
How long did Bischoff and Heyman together last, by the way? Did it not even last a year?
No, I mean, again, are we going to get into that now?
No, I'm just
curious. We were going to wait.
Basic question. That's in the last year, right?
Yeah,
okay. Anyways, Joel, any last thoughts on that at all?
Just before the Fox contract started.
That would be the story I'd go, finally getting Bobby to the top of that mountain, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to book it that way, so I don't know where they go from Bobby next. I don't know. I think Drew and Orton are next, and if the rumors are true about how Vince feels about the ratings and how USA feels about the ratings, I do wonder if Randy's going to be the next world champion.
How many times has Randy been champion? Do either one of you know?
I think he's an 11-time champion, if I remember correctly.
I'm going to double-check really quick here. He is 9 plus 4.
13.
Yeah, so 13 times. Yeah.
So he's getting up there to the Cena category.
Let's get into the Cena category. Cena and Randy at Mania this year.
I'm looking forward to Jon Stewart making him lose the match.
There you go. Do we really have to talk about the Street Profits Vikings thing, Joel?
Yes.
It was another cinematic match. It was.
Was it a match though?
I don't think it was. It was just a goofy thing that happened. I don't really know what to say about it. It was there. I don't really know what to say about it.
I don't either. It happened. It got a few chuckles from me, but ultimately I was kind of like, I don't know if I needed this on the show. And that's not a good thing. That's really not a good thing to leave someone going, I don't know if I needed this.
Yeah, so that happened. Mo, I'm sure you have thoughts.
Quick thoughts. I watched War Machine in Japan, ROH, all over the place. I watched them destroy people. I watched the crowd chant war, war, war with them. I watched them be destroyers and book strong and vicious, and this is not who they're meant to be. This is not how to best use them. This is destroying them. It's destroying their brand, and they will be rehabbed in AEW whenever that time comes. Just brutal. This is how much you suck. This is how you're using a team like these guys. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's I mean, even Street Profits too. I think Street Profits is a hell of a team. Montez Ford can be a future world champion.
I don't know if he can be a future world champion. I do think he can be superstar, upper mid
super duper though. Star. Super duper star. Yeah.
I think he can be definitely upper mid card. The thing about them is their personalities and gimmick, it's fine with all this comedy stuff. Like, it suits them. It's okay. It's not, doesn't hurt them. It's a fine use of them. I don't know if it's the best use of them, but it's a fine use of them. But it's a terrible use of the War Raiders. Or Viking Raiders, or whatever the hell you want to call them. It's a terrible, terrible use of them.
Sure is. Joel, any last thoughts before we get to the final match?
I like Montez Ford. That's what I took from this. I like Montez Ford, and AEW is going to get another tag team eventually.
There's so many tag teams out there that they can get. I was thinking about this. I'm like, there's five or six more teams that they did, and they actually got them. I mean, they would need a show just for tag teams. That second show would be just tag teams. I wasn't thinking the Usos. I was thinking the Briscoes.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually thinking Chris Hero and Cesaro.
Would the TNT want the Briscoes with their history, though?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's water under the bridge. It's years, it's years ago. I think somebody will bring it up, but who knows? I mean, they also got rid of that guy who made stupid comments years ago on AEW Dark that they got rid of. So who knows? But I was thinking them. Obviously, you know, the Guerrillas of Destiny, you know, Gallows and Anderson.
Not the New Day. The New Day is the one they'll never get.
No, not the New Day. But the Usos could be out there. Like, there are a ton of
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon. I could. I. If they can do it, and I'm not 100% convinced they can't. If we have an Inner Circle versus the Elite moment, especially when the crowds are back. And Undisputed Era confronted those two teams and had a three-way brawl. I think there could be a fundamental paradigm shift in the power structure of wrestling right now, and who's demanding the audience and who's collecting. Already, I mean, we saw. The buy rate for Double or Nothing was insane. Especially for the amount of people you actually have watching, the buy rate's insane. Keep in mind, their buy rate for this pay-per-view was significantly better than what WWE was doing for their pay-per-views outside of SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and
Mania.
Years ago, before the network, when more people were buying pay-per-views. Like, it's insane.
The only thing with Undisputed Era is Cole's contracts reportedly got 18 more months on it.
I don't know. I've been hearing different numbers on that. The one person whose contract that they're least sure of apparently is Roderick Strong. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not with Cole. It could be. It could be a damn shame.
We'll get to that point when we talk to NXT. Let's get this pay-per-view done. Again, I don't want the show to go too long.
Already going too long.
Yeah, we are. The main event, we had Randy Orton versus Edge in the greatest wrestling match of all time. Now, well, it wasn't that. It was a pretty damn good match.
Yeah. Yep. It was
definitely the best match in WWE this year. It isn't saying a lot, but yeah.
It's not an Okada-level match. Okada's really the standard bearer for wrestling for me right now. But it was a good match. Like, I think this would have been on par with some of the IC title matches in New Japan.
Was it both men's best match, Joel? I never asked you. Was this the best Randy Orton match ever and the best Edge match ever?
Oh, God. No, come on. No. I don't even have to see it to know it's not as good as either one of them had against Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Or Cena in the TLC in Toronto.
Or Cena, yeah.
Man standing match with Cena.
Yeah.
It was a very good match. Good back-to-back matches from WWE with AJ and Bryan, and now this with Randy and Edge. And again, it kind of just goes to show at the end of the day, having good wrestling matches makes for good wrestling. And I hope that's something hopefully they pick up over the last 2 days for as far as buzz goes of the Bryan and the AJ match.
They also, right away, I'm just going to remind you, didn't they also do the Viking Raiders thing?
Who?
You know, you're saying they're going to know that there's good, you know, wrestling is the way to go.
Oh,
and it's
I'm
like,
not going to say there are. I'm just saying there has been. There has been buzz, at least, that they had two good wrestling matches. You would think that would be that. I'm not saying they will, but they had a very good match on SmackDown with Bryan and AJ. Fantastic match. And they had a really good match tonight. And just goes to show you, even with Bobby and Drew, for the most part, to the end, just good matches. They were just a good, entertaining match with a, you know, and I think this match had, unfortunately, a lot working against it. And I think Edge and Randy did a good job on their social media making fun of the builds and trying to knock it down and being like, best cup of coffee ever, best this ever. But both saying that they were proud.
Well, I mean, that's all we've been doing is making fun of the fact that it's the best match ever.
Yeah, so I think they did a good job of kind of doing that. I thought at the beginning, Mo, they did the stuff at the Fink, which Lance Storm said that, like, oh, that was a really, like, he said that's a moment the Fink would have meant a lot to him. And it was a really touchy moment. They, you know, brought down the old MSG mics. So that was cool. Yeah. They had Little Nate wear the old, like, WrestleMania 1 referee attire. They did pipe in crowd noise, which I
heard
the fan
of. This is my big question about it, the crowd noise. Is I heard the This Is Awesome chance, which is already overdone. And that's one thing I haven't missed with audiences being gone. I mean, they pumped it in right away.
I guess the difference for that is Joel and I were talking to each other during the match. I didn't hear it. It wasn't as annoying to me as much. I didn't audibly hear. What about you, Joel?
There were definitely different points. Like, to me, there are different points where the crowds were doing some chants that I thought were, you don't feel there's honesty to it. But there are other points where it's nice to hear a little bit of that noise. But the genuine reaction is always questionable, especially with the state everything's in.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, overall, I thought, you know, some people want to say right now, like Bleacher Report said, match of the year candidate. Sure, I guess. I mean, it's been a crazy year. If you want to put it on as a candidate for match of the year,
How does it compare to Omega and Hangman versus the Bucks?
It's not better than that. But it, you know, if you want to put it on a short list for match of the year, sure. I'm not going to be opposed to that. It's not match of the year though. To me, that still is. I mean, you just mentioned that one. That's definitely a match of the year. Match of the year for me still is Okada and Ibushi.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal match of the year. But, you know, if you want to put this on a short list, I'm not going to get mad at it.
Main roster, though, I mean, because I was thinking about this a couple years ago. Because I was thinking about, you know, the last few days about the fall of NXT. And, you know, and how it doesn't feel like we're having those great matches as. And I was thinking about over the last, I don't know, 2 years, maybe 3 years, pretty much every single match that I went, that's if I was to do the top five matches from WWE, I think they'd all be NXT matches.
Only one I could think that we couldn't think that it wasn't was the two Brock matches versus AJ and Bryan, and then I had the Sasha-Becky match and Bex and Charlotte at Evolution.
I would not take any of those over, you know, Strong and...
Oh, no, I'm just going main roster, though. Like if
No, but yeah, I'm saying, no, I'm not saying that they haven't had a few good matches. I mean, you're kind of, they have such good talent, you know?
It's mainly
I mean, the match they had with AJ and Bryan where, you know, Bryan turned heel afterwards, that was a hell of a match, too, right? Like, but all their best matches seem to have come from NXT. And, I had a point with this, and I can't remember what it was because we got... You distracted me. And now I've forgotten my point. So let's move on.
I think the point is good. You know, kind of going through this, as Joel and I were watching this.
I was going to say is it's possible the best WWE match for the first time is a main roster match, not a NXT match this year.
Yeah, I mean... I think the last time I thought about it was maybe Evolution with Charlotte and Becky, but I'm sure there was a much better NXT match that year. I can't think right now, but I thought that match was really good. pretty much Charlotte's been the only person from the main roster that consistently was putting out really good matches. AJ to a degree too, but Charlotte seemed to be doing that.
AJ peaked about 2 years ago, and he hasn't had as good a match
lately. This week.
Yeah, and he's working with Daniel Bryan this week. Charlotte keeps on having these good matches, and I don't even think she's all that good a worker. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she is either. I think Sasha's still the best woman's worker they have. But she just hasn't had that opportunity yet.
Asuka's the best. Carrie's saying.
Is. I'm saying. I'm sorry. I meant out of the horsewoman. I think.
Sasha's horsewoman. I probably go Bayley, but I mean it's close between them. But yeah, I definitely do not feel like it's Charlotte. But she keeps having the best matches.
Mm-hmm. So that was Backlash. Any last thoughts on that on the match, Joel?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was an excellent use of the punt to end the match.
Oh yeah, they used the punt. That was crazy. I can't remember the last time we saw the punt.
I love the callback to some of the moves of wrestling greats and just the back and forth struggle between the two. I don't like the torn tricep, and I tried really hard to figure out where it happened, but I couldn't find any point where Edge tore his tricep.
He's out for 9 months. I mean, is he coming back? You got him. I mean, damn. In some ways, isn't this the best way to go out now? You have a great match, and you put the guy over. He'll be 48 by the time he comes back.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's a big
part. And torn triceps are usually a sign of that you've done things to enhance your body. Very often.
He did get popped in 2007 after the Benoit thing. So
you're saying maybe he did something to help his neck out then?
I'm saying it's very possible. So
I mean, you look at Anderson Silva when he broke his leg, what he did to get himself back into shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was a gnarly break. So it's not far off for...
I'm not saying for sure. I'm just saying, nothing would surprise me.
And I mean, the other thing with that, there is evidence of it in his past. So not saying that he did do it, but there's a chance.
You can't rule it out.
No.
Okay, so we have do you want to break this up into the Backlash stuff and then this whole other talk? To not make it a 2-hour podcast.
I think we need to. I think we'll skip that other topic. Number one, we sort of covered it a little bit. Number two, mm-hmm. it's evergreen. We can talk about it anytime and really get into it. And number three, we do have to talk New Japan's the New mm-hmm. Japan Cup.
All we'll say is this. We'll talk about it for 5 minutes and really quick.
We'll try.
It's frustrating, just as someone that has been a WWE fan, Mark, whatever you want to say, compared to you two especially.
I was you once.
We all were you.
And I just don't really fucking care. And I think that's where you are now, Mo. Like, tonight I watched the Bobby Drew match. I had a good time with that. I really enjoyed Randy and Edge, but I just don't fucking care. I mean, even with NXT last week, I never went back and ended up watching because I just don't care. And that's a whole different can of worms there. And it's funny with something like AEW.
You're right. That's exactly what it is. And that's where it's scariest, when you don't care anymore.
No, I want to avoid spoilers. I watched the Bruce Lee doc instead, like I told you. And I was like, okay, I'll watch NXT. I put it off. And to the point I just told Joel, just tell me what happens. I don't really give a shit. And it's funny with AEW, not to keep on bringing up this AEW thing, but I don't watch the weekly television like you guys do. I kind of, follow here and there. But watching that pay-per-view 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh, this is super fun. This is great. Like, I'm having a really good time. And it kind of brings that brief memory of like, oh, this is why I like this thing. That's why I remember. And that's what's going to happen when I watch Japan this week.
Finish your thought, then I want to jump in.
You watch that with Randy and Edge, and it's like, oh yeah, this is really cool that this match happened, and it was really fun. I don't think it made me want to come back for more, and I think NXT's gotten to that point too now, especially where like you just don't fucking care at all. There's nothing that makes you excited. where AEW, Japan, they still have things like a real sport or anything else. It's like, oh, I'm interested to see where they go with that. With WWE, I think, yeah, the AJ and Bryan, it's like, yeah, I guess I'll watch that. I'm excited. But it's something that they've done. It's just AJ and Daniel Bryan is the best wrestlers of the past decade facing each other. Of course I'm going to watch that. It's great. Bobby Lashley and Drew, it's like, oh, yeah, I've been wanting Bobby Lashley to get a world title match, and I'm a fan of MVP. Then you really did, as far as a build. And again, with Bryan and AJ, then you did as a build. It's Daniel Bryan versus AJ. People are going to watch it. But you haven't done enough to really restore the faith in your fans to be like, I want to watch this because there's something new and exciting. You're just you're resolving on the past to try to draw people in without any effort going forward into it.
Yeah, this is where it's scariest is that there is no faith in the fans. When you lose that, faith, you know, then you're screwed. And this is where they've gotten to, that the fans don't have every time they do something now. Instead of going, oh, that's going to be cool, you automatically go, oh, they're going to screw that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you reach that point, there's it's so hard to bring it back. And
Chelsea Green, it's already fucked up. Like, yeah. It was kind of excited about this Robert Stone thing, and it's done. Like,
yeah.
And I don't even have a reason why it's done. It's just done. And now Chelsea Green's on the TV anymore. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's because they're just somehow at some point in time they became bad at their job.
Yeah.
They're just bad at their job. It's I don't know, man. But that's the scariest thing. I mean, when you're still angry, that means there's something there. When you stop actually caring, you're in a lot of trouble, and they're in a lot of trouble, man. I am looking at these ratings and seeing these 1.7s, and here's what, and as we now are getting into it a little bit, but the thing about it is, talk about. I remember when Matt Hardy was having the lawsuit with Impact Wrestling over the mm-hmm. Woken character. And I was saying, even if they have the legal rights, Impact, they should not be doing this because the fans already have such bad faith in it. And they want to see they're on Matt Hardy's side. They cannot afford the PR battle. And WWE cannot afford to lose any PR battles right now because they have already lost so many. And firing Heyman loses a PR battle because people like him. And it's just one more thing of them constantly doing this, whether it's pushing people they don't want or not pushing people they do, the fans do want, or going to Saudi Arabia or seeing things on Dark Side of the Ring or, you know, seeing things from John Oliver, seeing things from, I don't know, everything. They consistently have been losing PR values to the point where it's one of the things that they talk about. I mean, do you guys know how old the NXT audience is? Do you guys know the average age?
It's in the 50s, is it not? 40s?
Yeah, it's a lot of...
58 years old. The average age for NXT viewers is 58 years old. And they need to get new audience members. And one of the things that studies have shown is that it's more important for the younger generations, millennials and these things, to like the company they're supporting. It really matters to them that they're good people. And it's something WWE has dropped the ball on. And just the fact that you like someone like Heyman and you've gotten rid of him. When people – do you remember when Kurt Angle came back? Do you remember his pop?
Yeah.
At Mania? The night after Mania?
And remember, no, that wasn't when he came back, was it?
Night after Mania? The night after Mania when Vince made him GM was the first time was back
okay.
on.
That, yeah. Okay, so it was a great pop.
Yeah.
Do you remember Shane McMahon's pop when he came back?
It was mental. It was crazy.
It was even bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not that people like Shane McMahon more than Kurt Angle. It's not that people believe he's better or respect him more, anything. It was because Kurt Angle was a character coming back, and it was great to see him because we wanted to see him wrestle one more time and wanted to see him in the WWE get a send-off. Shane McMahon coming back, people were hoping, oh, God, will this mean change? They want it so bad. They want it so bad, and they've been wanting it for so long. And that was years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
They've been wanting it for so long. When we started, the first time I ever came on the podcast, I was bitching about WWE, and I know Josh, you're the loyalist, and you were mm-hmm. you were like, well, I don't understand, if you don't like them, why don't you just not watch? Which is mm-hmm. where I'm like, I'm now, but it's more boredom and just sad. But my point is, I said to you is, it's like, no, it's not that I'm not complaining because I don't like them. I'm complaining because I love them and I want them to succeed. And what they're doing, I see them leading them down a bad path, and they continue to do it. And now here we are. And I'm looking at this 1.77 rating, and I'm thinking they can get down to 1.1 million viewers. Like, I'm scared to that point for the,
you would
for
think
this company
would be
and
watching,
it's,
right?
It's actually possible now. And I'm sad about it.
Yeah.
I really have.
For sure. During a pandemic, when you think that the rating would bump up, there's nothing. Like, we're at a point right now where, yes, there's much worse things to worry about right now, but we're at a point right now where there is no movies to go to until the end of July. There is no real new TV show that has a lot of people buzzing on Netflix or HBO or anything like that. There is no sports, really. EPL and Wunderliga is back, but that's such a spread out situation. It's kind of a wonderment to me that WWE didn't really try to take advantage of this pandemic, and that instead of I honestly thought they'd have a minor bump just because people are like, well, I haven't watched wrestling for a while, I might as well. Instead, they've taken such a dip. It's a really surprising thing during this whole pandemic mm-hmm. thing, when it's a real chance to grow, and you're looking at the FOMO. The NFL is going to come back with people starving for sports, and the NFL is going to be bigger than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs on top of that. One week, they're going to have the tail end of the Masters on top of that. I don't know if they go get the pay-per-view that week, but you're going to have golf back. You're going to have everything kind of at once. And that's when these ratings are going to jump between a 0.97. And for AEW, they have the potential of having NBA playoffs with the bump that AEW airs on Wednesdays on their shows.
The thing about it is that AEW doesn't have to, like, their ratings are down too. I think their ratings are down 12% and WWE's are down 23% during the pandemic. But they're down.
Yeah.
They are. But the thing about it is, as again proved by the pay-per-view, is the fan engagement level is still through the roof. The fan engagement level for WWE is gone, and I just don't know that you can ever. The thing is, they cannot. I'm sorry, this is true. They cannot win back those fans. Most likely, those fans are gone.
Mm-hmm.
What they have to do is create new fans, and you have to create new fans by reflecting like when Steve Austin reflected what the society and people at that time, and Hulk Hogan very much reflected the 80s in a lot of ways. And nobody in WWE, the way they do things, ever has a chance to reflect anything because it's also manufactured.
Did you see?
Whereas
Roman's
I look like a guy like Darby Allin, and I think mm-hmm. he might catch on in some way that we can't anticipate because nobody's creating him. And if he's the guy that connects, but you have no chance to. Nobody has a chance to connect anymore. It's so like it'll never happen again. I really wonder. People always say it's cyclical. I'm really not sure it is anymore. I think the system is so broken that. And that Road Dogg interview, where he's talking about, how we have the best wrestler on the planet, period. Well, let me tell you something. If he's saying we have the best wrestler, yes, you can't even question that. We have the best. Hey, you have some great matches. You do. You have NXT. But you can't even question that. Well, let me tell you something. If you look in the mirror and you need to lose 10 pounds and you look in the mirror and go, I look great, you're never going to lose those 10 pounds. And it's the same thing. They're not going to improve with the – I mean, they have to script promos because they're worried people are going to swear on TV. Number one, you're Road Dogg. You come from the Attitude Era. And number two – people have been cutting promos for years without swearing, and AEW is not having problems. And number three, you're on a delay. Like, all these things that they, all of these excuses and all these different things, and saying that Adam Cole would be champ if he was bigger. Like, it's not going to get better. I think I've lost all hope with them, and that's sad. I didn't want to lose hope with them. Like, WWE matters to me. Rant over.
The thing, like, you look at AEW, and AEW is really the land of misfit toys. And I think that identifies more with this current audience, because you look at it, it's all the wrestlers, a good chunk of their wrestlers are guys that were undesirable, that have gone too undeniable, and aren't in this wrestling company. I think people identify with that and go, these guys were the best, and they were denied by the big corporate glossing over of this company, and this is a place where anyone can go and succeed. Naturally, go over and get over and earn a spot. You don't have to sit there and go, well, they're toast because they had a bad night, or they had a bad promo, or they're not the look that Vince wants. You no longer have that fears with AEW. And the same goes for Japan. You don't have the same fears that WWE does.
Not just one thing goes wrong. And then Cody Rhodes is the perfect example. You know, I mean, or just the whim of Vince McMahon 1 week. I don't know about this Ricochet guy. And you just give up on him. I'm like, what? Ricochet? But it's like Cody Rhodes. He's such a big draw right now. Like, he's such a big draw for them. He's a legit draw. If you look at what he can do for house show attendance and what he's doing for pay-per-views, he's a draw.
Yeah.
Could he have been a draw ever in WWE? Would it have been possible for him ever to be a draw in WWE? And I'd say no. And again, that speaks very badly of them.
You look at the firing of Paul Heyman. And I mean, the Paul Heyman, Bruce Pritchard jobs are just simply just for face value. Because the buck stops with Vince. It always has, always will. They had probably some creative input, but I don't think they had a whole ton of creative input. I think it was still
what Vince thought. How good a job are you doing of putting on the television show that Vince really likes? Pritchard does a better job. Vince has to change less. So that's why he likes him more.
Yeah.
Whereas Heyman goes, what you're doing is not good long term for the company. We got to push these new guys. It's going to take a year and a half at least. That's not what Vince wants to hear. So he does that, though. I mean, does he have control? Yes. But at the end of the day, everything is at the whim of you know.
Yeah. And so you look at that. You look at putting in a guy that's going to favor Vince. You look at the Road Dogg comments. You look at the state of NXT, and you look at all the reports that you're hearing. You're hearing that Fox in USA is mad. You're hearing that Vince is furious over where NXT is versus AEW. So now NXT, which was already not the NXT that we all loved, it changed to something that wasn't fully recognizable. They took a punk band and changed everything about the punk band and put them on a stage and went, draw all the same fans, and they weren't. And then they went up against a new punk band that everyone was excited to see, and they haven't blown up to being the Beatles, but they've got a solid following and selling fan base, but they're still true to themselves. NXT changed themselves the minute they got to that next step, and that's not because of Adam Cole or Johnny Gargano, that's because of Vince McMahon. So now you're running down this rabbit hole. You're on this course where NXT is about to change a lot more, and it's not going to save it. It's not going to help it beat AEW in the long term. It might beat it in the short term. It might pop up.
No, it won't. The thing is, AEW still has the biggest star in Chris Jericho. Yeah. He's a bigger star than anybody in WWE right now still. I mean, whether they have a smaller audience, if stars is what draws, Jon Moxley is still pretty much as big a star as anybody WWE has, and Chris Jericho is significantly bigger than anybody they have. Like, that's it.
Except for Brock.
And Cody's
Except
getting up there. Yeah, okay, Brock's a different deal.
Did you see the Roman promo, by the way?
No.
Roman cut a promo or whatever it was online, and it was like, that was fucking money. And well, if Roman could actually be himself, holy shit.
Well, yes. And Jericho has said top of his list is Roman. And you start to real, because the problem with Roman, when you look at Roman and you see everything, he was forced down. But if you let Roman naturally get to that point, I don't think that would have been the path of least resistance. But that wasn't the quick, gratifying, see, I'm right path. It was, you went the wrong way. So I don't want to, this is absolutely a larger topic for another day. But it very much is, we're heading in a situation where you're seeing creative from the Stone Age that hasn't grown, hasn't evolved, still lives in little stone caves, still does the cave wall paintings to communicate because it worked 30 years ago. And you're seeing a company that is a little bit more hip with the time, is a little bit more up with things. And you're seeing the cavemen go, why isn't this working? And getting mad.
My question for you, though, is here's one thing I was thinking. When was NXT at its best? Was it 18 months ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? When were they? They probably
Mania
somewhere in that.
Last year was the peak. The Mania Joe went to, I think, was the peak.
So I'm talking like a one-year period. So we'll say Mania of 2018 to Mania of 2019?
New Orleans to New York.
Okay. That product, is AEW as good as that product was?
No, that was the best product I've seen in wrestling probably ever.
I think it's probably about as good, but I can't not say it's better. I think it's probably as good, but it's definitely not better. And so that's what's crazy to me.
I don't know if it was better than Japan. That's the other.
Not better than Japan. Not better than Japan. No.
No. No, and I don't think AEW is better than Japan either. No, but it's AEW is very much more sports entertainment than I ever thought it would be. But it's good. It's
the right.
It shows you could do like you talk about the comedy, and it's like the right balance. Well, it shows you can do that. Yeah. You know,
you're talking about the Inner Circle pod, right? About going to TK and people are like, that's a little too silly. Let's not do that. Like Sammy talked about all the other things he wanted to get hit with. Yeah, and they're like, Sammy, no, stopped. And then they went to like the stadium, and Sammy's like, I want to do that, and I want to do that, and I want to do that. And DK and Jericho are like, no. So there is the right balance of knowing what to do and not to do.
Yeah, and having the experience, the person with the experience to say that is helps. But I don't know, man. Like they just put on a guy in Bruce Pritchard, who was running creative from like 1988 to 1998.
But he loves you.
Oh, whatever, dude. I complained. I didn't even think Heyman was the right move because as much as I thought, you know, he's more in tune with today's people, he's still a guy in his 50s, and I thought you guys got to go younger.
Well, see,
and now they've gone and Bruce Pritchard's only a couple years older than Heyman. Like he was super young back when he was, you know, Birth of Love and everything, like in his 20s. But
yes, man, at its finest. Vince has his own puppet.
That's
Vince
it. I actually, the audio was up. I know you guys know that there was like Vince, you could buy DVDs and different things of Pritchard and Bischoff did all these Monday Night Wars, like podcast or like tours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The first one they ever did was at the WrestleMania I was at, and I recorded it. And even then, and he was fired from the company, and I don't think he was working at TNA at the time. He was fired from the company, though, had been gone for years. He was still kissing Vince McMahon's ass.
And Hunter's.
And Hunter's. To this group of about I think it was like 18 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need to know about Bruce Pritchard right there.
Here's the thing. This will be the last point, then we'll go to New Japan. You look at WWE when they had the Attitude Era. They had bright minds like Jim Cornette that, for better or worse, they had Vince Russo, which on a leash, some of his stuff seemed to work for them for ratings wise.
Some of it needed to happen because he was listening to things like he was seeing things like ECW and listening to things like Howard Stern and Jerry Springer. Yeah, some of that needed to happen.
You had Pritchard and then you got Heyman. And then 20 years later, you brought in more or less the same group minus Russo. Though some days I wonder if Russo's working with Vince.
A couple people asked me this week, do you think he's going to get rehired soon? They seriously think it could happen. And my answer is only if Jeff Jarrett has Vince McMahon's ear. But the fact is even coming up.
The fact that you have not gone to young creative minds to save your company, to build your company's future, where when you have guys like Matt Hardy, Matt Nick Jackson, Kenny Omega,
Chris Jericho,
walk
away.
You've got Chris Jericho's old, but somehow Jericho's in tune.
But look at Gato. How old is Gato? When Gato, that company was in dire straits when Gato took over. New Japan was in bad shape. Mm-hmm. Gato was an existing wrestler in his late 30s who took over. No history of booking, and they trusted him. And look at where they are now. WWE, on the other hand, looks at people like even like all those years ago, Gabe Sapolsky was winning Booker of the Year in the Observer Newsletter Awards. And people were like asking Jarrett and Hunter and these people, like, why isn't this guy getting hired by your company? And it's like, well, because he only books for the hardcores. He can't get over to the mainstream. And they think that like a Pritchard knows how to do that. The problem is, you don't know if what he does can get over to the mainstream until you try. You can't just say it doesn't. Because it's never worked. The reason it's never worked is because it's never been tried.
I will say this for Bruce Pritchard, in his fairness right now, SmackDown has probably been the best show WWE has done, but I did talk to Joel about that. Now, is that because of Pritchard or because you have... Number one, though, their champion is shit, so that's a strike against him. And has the good things about the show have been the New Day, the Usos before they got hurt, and then AJ, Brian, and Bailey and Sasha. Has it been because of Pritchard that some of those good things have happened, or just because their talent has been able to make that show good?
It's they talked about this in the Observer newsletter, that when they were divvying up the rosters, mm-hmm. Bischoff and Pritchard, who was there with them, they wanted all the guys that were over. They wanted all the guys that were stars. And, Heyman, to his credit, wanted all the guys like Buddy Murphy that weren't stars, that he could make stars, even if it would take a year or two mm-hmm. or three. That was what he wanted. And if you look at the rosters, there's way more star power. Plus, they only have to do 2 hours mm-hmm. instead of three. That's a big fucking deal.
Right. Makes sense.
New Japan time?
Yes.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Did you, by the way, Mo, did you watch NXT this pay-per-view?
I'm like you. I just could not get up the energy to do it. And
is that
and
the
when
first
the time,
takeover you've missed?
That is the first takeover I've ever missed.
Same.
Ever.
Same.
I watched it, and one of the biggest thoughts that I took away from it was, how did they miss on Finn Balor?
Let's not open that can of worms. Let's get to Japan.
Maybe he'll be in Japan soon enough.
Yeah, a lot of guys. The ship is definitely the rats or whatever it is that saying is, they are leaving the ship.
Yeah.
I don't know if $1 million is enough to keep Adam Cole around.
I especially with Britt Baker being over there, right?
And you always see him at the parties. You gotta wonder.
Yeah.
New Japan Cup.
Yeah.
Mo, you lead this.
What? I don't have it in front of me. Okay, but this thing looks great. If you look at the one that they had in February that they were going to originally run, it was a little stronger than this one. It's really noticeable.
No Osprey.
Yeah, no Osprey. It's actually really noticeable, no Osprey. It's actually the people from the Southern Hemisphere that the Bad Luck Fale, Mikey Nichols, Hanaro, Jay White, people from New Zealand and Australia, none of them are there. And I'm sure, I mean, Jay White would be there if he could be, as would Fale. Like, I'm sure, right? And Jay White was originally facing... Was it Okada in the first round? I think it was Okada in the first round. Or was it Tanahashi?
Gato, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, that is awesome. But let's just look it up. Let's just New Japan
I have,
Cup.
I have right here in front of me. So, and okay, also,
have you got the original as well?
I don't have the original. I'm going to look up the original while you do this. I am interested why Jay White can't travel. Well, maybe I guess it has to do with Japan because New Zealand is COVID-free. So yeah, that's a
all
little
of
bit,
them are.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know what Australia is, but that's where Will is living. Will lives in Australia, not in England. At least last time I checked, he lived in Australia. So a little bit of trouble.
I thought he lived in Japan now. So that's.
Oh, then yeah, who knows? I don't know why he's not there. I mean, I thought Zack Sabre lived in the UK. So I don't. Who knows? But yeah, so this one you have.
I've got the old one. Okay, so yeah, you're missing. One. So some big. First key matchups, which you had Jeff Cobb versus Toby Maccabee. You had Colt Cabana versus Bad Luck Fale. You had Okada versus Jay White. Oh, my God. Okada versus Jay White. You had Kenta versus Carl Fredericks. Kenta's not on this one.
Nope.
You had... Oh, my God. You had Will Ospreay versus Shingo Takagi. Oh, sweet. Baby Jesus, that would have been amazing.
I know. I know. So that's it. You cannot say it's as strong as it was. It was so strong. It was ridiculous, those first round matchups. That said, there's some more weaker, you know, guys, or maybe guys who will surprise us is maybe a better way to put it in this one. And we're going to see... But by the time you start getting into the quarterfinals, there's still enough intriguing matches in the first round. Then you start getting into the quarterfinals and then you get into the semifinals. The thing is, I booked it out. I did my bracket for the February one. I did my bracket for this one. I had the exact same four guys in the semifinals, exact same finals, exact same winner. So I feel I know, like that's, you know. But so I don't think anything has changed booking plans wise if I'm right on this. And, you know, this is harder to call, I think, than the G1 even. So, I mean, who knows? But, yeah, it's too bad because that was awesome what they had. But there's still some great stuff here, and it's going to be awesome.
Who do you have winning it, Mo?
Okay, so I here's what I have if you look at it. You know what? I can give you my entire. If I could call it up here, if I could actually get an image on my freaking phone, I could call it up here. But I got on the one end, I got Ishii and Okada, two Chaos guys in the semifinal in the left bracket.
Oh.
So yeah, Chaos versus Chaos. So, I mean, you're going to have, you know, Minoru Suzuki. I think he's taking on Okada in the second round. One of the things that was really interesting was, tell me, who was it? Juice Robinson and David Finley looked like they were going to meet in the second round of the original cup. There's two more guys that not in it.
Yeah, Dave Finley's not on this. Doesn't he live in Japan too?
I don't know. I thought Juice did as well, but he's not on this now.
Juice is dating
Tony Storm.
Tony Storm, right? So maybe he's in the UK now.
Is Juice dating Tony Storm?
She's an Aussie. Maybe he's in Australia too.
Okay. Well, either way, Juice. Oh, that's interesting. The point being that Finley and Robinson were gonna probably meet up, and that would have been cool. That's another one I would have loved to have seen. Mm-hmm. But either way, I mean, I still have Okada and Ishii. The other hand, I have I got God damn it. Unless you could see it, it's so hard to... Okay, hold on. Okay, I think that we're going to see... God damn it. Why can't I get... This is good podcasting.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. So I think we're going to see... Shingo Takagi in the semifinals against Evil. And that means that Takagi, I see him beating Sanada. I see him beating Evil and going to the finals against Ishii and then beating Ishii to win it. And that will put him, who has beaten two guys from Los Ingobernables, he beats two guys on the way there to face the leader of Los Ingobernables while he's still a member of the team. That's how I see it going down. I see him and Evil in the semifinals, Okada and Ishii, and then Ishii and him in the finals and him going over. And it also plays off of their G1 match last year where they had the history, they were in the same dojo, and you know, they really wanted to go at each other. They went at each other, had one of the best matches in the G1. Naito won, and then afterwards, I can't even say his name. Takagi said, "I respect you. This isn't over." To me, it's perfect booking. Him versus Naito at Dominion is money.
Oh,
yeah, so that's how I got it. Anybody else have opinions?
I didn't do my bracket, but I was wondering if Sanada was gonna win. Still go with the Los Ingobernables, but it'd be Sanada instead of Shingo. Either one of those.
The storyline is more Shingo.
Yeah.
If you look at the history and everything.
I think you're probably right. I'm all for that.
Even if I'm wrong, wouldn't it be great if that was right?
Yeah.
So good. But I really think there's a good chance that's going to happen. And the fact that he beats two of the guys from his own group to go against the leader of his own group, who he has that history with, who he used to beat up in the dojo, he used to bully in the dojo. It's just all right there. It's great stuff. It's taking real life stuff and turning it into wrestling, and it's just, that's what it's supposed to be, guys.
Money.
I like it. Only thing I'll say is I'm pretty sure that Tana will face Ibushi, and that'll be a good match. And then they'll kind of, because they were kind of starting to be a tag team, so I don't know how that's going to play out with the singles match on the bracket, but something will be played out with all that.
I see, actually, Sabre. I in my bracket, I had Zack Sabre Jr. beating Ibushi. That could be the best match of the first round, though. Oh, it's so good. But I have Sabre, and then I have Sabre beating Tanahashi, and then Sabre versus what's it called again? Yeah, Takagi.
I'm just so excited for Okada and Gato because
I know
Okada more than any wrestler. So
it's kind of great.
I remember when Joel sent me the card, I'm like, that's not Okada facing who I think it is. He's like, yes, it is. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing.
It's a long-term story that will finally pay off.
Yes, exactly. And everybody's going to be wanting to see him kick his ass, even without an audience there. You're going to be cheering at the screen. It's easy to lose yourself and believe in things, you know, and cheer in New Japan. And in AEW, something that, again, is unfortunately missing from WWE's product right now.
Just hook it in my veins. Give me New Japan. I'm ready for whatever they're going to give me. The thought that we will get the G1 this year is a good thing. I think there's a lot of good matchups in New Japan, and as things potentially relax more and more and more, I think we're going to get some really good matches, and I think Will Ospreay has had plenty of time to heal up so he can go like gangbusters.
I was thinking that about Naito, who's so beat up that, this will be so good for him and his knees, the break. But
and Okada.
I do wonder how long they're going to keep going with the two belts. you know, him defending both. Doesn't seem to make sense. I kind of have a sneaking suspicion. It is weird if you're going to plan a worldwide expansion that you're New Japan and your main title is IWGP. And I wonder if combining the two of them would give them an excuse to call it the NJPW title. And for branding purposes, I know what traditionalists said they are in Japan, but I just wonder for branding purposes if they would consider that, because it would be easier. It would make more sense to a lot of people. The casual fans.
I just think I'm just excited to see this brand of wrestling again. It's been a while. I don't even think, because the difference of what the Japan crowd already is, the respect and the quiet, I don't think the empty arena is going to be that big of a deal, to be completely honest. I think the wrestling is going to do its own talk. We've seen that in AEW at times too. The wrestling just kind of does the talking and you do forget a crowd's there.
The strong style is more suited to, definitely, to what they're doing.
Yeah. Anything else, Joel?
Oh, there's probably plenty. We
Fight Island? Fight Island? Want to talk about Fight Island?
I don't.
I'm too exhausted to talk about Fight Island.
Connor retiring for the 50th time?
Oh, yeah. my first thought, I don't know about you guys, when Connor retired, I'm like, oh, who's about to sue him for sexual harassment now?
My thought was, did they add the Diaz match and he decided that he didn't want to fight Diaz and lose again?
Could be that too.
That was that. And then the spider fight, I don't think he wanted to lose the spider. So I don't really, I think my buddy summed it up the best. I haven't really watched UFC as much anymore, but apparently 250 was really good. Especially the Amanda Nunes fight was apparently phenomenal.
She's getting pretty close to, and I know she's talking of retiring soon. Mm-hmm. She's getting pretty close to maybe being the best pound for pound male or female of all time.
And
she's starting to be still in that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, she's past Ronda. I think we can all agree on that.
Oh yeah. Easy.
But people will still talk about Ronda in different ways. She's so good. And the match she had against the Canadian girl, the fight, I did watch that. It was fantastic. It's unfortunate UFC doesn't really have the star power they used to, but the globalization, Dana has, originally I will say, Dana has done a very good job of globalizing the sport right now and doing a good job with it during the pandemic. Maybe not the safest environment at times, but as far as, you know, drawing people in, it was good. And it's unfortunate because I had heard the 250 was a very good show, but it sucks that it was overshadowed by the Conor retirement.
Yeah. Well, that's Conor for you.
Mm-hmm. It's, the deal that he has, and that'll do it for us tonight. I'm sure there are so much more things we could have talked about. It's been a crazy week with WWE and everything like that, but New Japan is back, and we look forward to talking to you with all that.
We needed this one, guys. I needed this one. There was so much to talk about.
Yeah, there was. So
thank you for the night.
Thank you, Mo, as always. And until next time, everyone, cheers, be safe, be smart, and enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye! And good night, Ben!